Hello and welcome to the Dogwood Podcast for the week of February 20th. I'm your host, Kai Nagata, coming to you once again from the Burnaby office above the car wash. Pretty exciting month in BC politics. On the Kinder Morgan oil tanker fight, a big development from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs. Last week, UBCIC committed to fighting the Texas Pipeline Company on all fronts, including court challenges, land defense, and a citizens' initiative. That's right, the Chiefs Council voted to work with Dogwood and allies to prepare an initiative bill and organizing strategy in case the pro-tanker BC Liberals form government again in May. Chief Judy Wilson will be here in a minute to tell us more, and we'll hear from our pipeline and tanker campaigner, Sophie Harrison, about what comes next. And Dogwood provincial organizer Dave Mills is ramping up his work on the North Island. We'll check in with Dave and Courtney. Finally, on the ban big money front, the legislature is finally back in session, and the stink of corruption just refuses to go away. Both NDP leader John Horgan and independent MLA Vicky Huntington introduced bills last week to try and make the swamp a little less fetid. Lisa Sammartino will be here to explain what you can do to ratchet up the pressure on lawmakers before the election. This is the Dogwood Podcast. First up, Judy Wilson, chief of the Nisqually Band and secretary-treasurer of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs. Last week, Chief Wilson brought forward the Kinder Morgan resolution that was adopted by the Assembly. She's on the line from Nisqually along the beautiful Thompson River. Welcome, Chief Wilson.
Hello, Kai.
So personally, I mean, your work on Kinder Morgan goes back a number of years. Can you talk about why this is one fight that you're not willing to lose?
The Kinder Morgan pipeline represents a real danger to our whole nation because it crosses many waterways and many sensitive areas within those lands where we hunt fish and, you know, we harvest and gather medicines and berries that a lot of our lifestyle is dependent on. So our whole way of life is threatened by the pipeline. And I really didn't agree with Ian Anderson when he said his only fight is coastal. The interior people, and there's many bands also launching court action as well with Coldwater, Chiefs East Behan's band. And, you know, there's other communities like ours who do not want any more impacts to our salmon or our water or our way of life. And the existing pipeline's already went in without our consent, and we have a lot of questions in how that was done as well. And then with the proposed new one, we still have concerns of spills, especially with bitumen being a dirty oil. It's different than crude oil, and so we've been hearing from the other nations who have done research that there's some real concerns to the ecosystem and to the animals and the water and the salmon.
Right, because it sinks in water. You mentioned Ian Anderson, the president of Kinder Morgan in Canada, and he talked about how the big fight he anticipated was along the coast there, along Burrard Inlet. But it does feel lately like there's people in the interior speaking out publicly in a way that we haven't heard as much in the last couple of years. Do you feel like there's momentum building in the interior along the Kinder Morgan route?
There's always been the opposition. But I think you're only hearing from the bands that was the issue. And now that the grassroots people and, the territorial people and the people that are really on the land, they're speaking out. And they've gone down and supported, the Standing Rock Sioux. And recently we had a meeting at Thompson River University called Standing Rock to Sukwatmaulu. And what it means is just that those major pipelines are threatening our way of life and the future of our nation and our people and our water that everyone depends on. So I think that's why you see also a lot of the environmental groups and citizens themselves coming together and converging, over this threat that's going to change our way of life. And, there's other economies, other ways of lives that have less footprint on our land, and that can be real inclusive economies instead of the 1% major big oil companies coming in and just destroying our lands and leaving us with very little I can't understand how the province can even say this makes economic sense for, you know, for British Columbians or, you know, people in our communities, because it really doesn't. If they do the math, they can see for themselves that it was little, very little that we're going to receive in any way benefits in economics. And I think a lot of whatever data is out there is being skewed to try to get people to buy in. But I see a lot of people really questioning a lot of things, especially with the economics and especially with the environment.
You brought forward a resolution last week to the floor of the EBCIC Chiefs Council, a very strong resolution that would basically authorize the Union of BC Indian Chiefs to fight Kinder Morgan on all fronts. How did you feel when your resolution came to the floor?
The resolution was accepted unanimously, so everyone, the union has about 110 members across BC, so there, you know, all of those communities that were present did support that work, and I think they know how important it is, you know, for our communities and our people and the environment and the water and the salmon. And there was a positive, I guess, front with the resolution, and it allows the union, which we have been doing a lot of work with other organizations as well, to work together more strategically, and also pulls together all the First Nations litigants that are litigating so that we can work more effectively together. So I think it's a timely resolution and is an important one that brings us all together, and also that we can share information with each other and be strategic, because we really do have to do that against these big oil companies.
We've got Dogwood organizers and volunteers all over the province listening to this podcast. Is there a message that you want to send to them?
I think with the organizers and the volunteers through Dogwood, I think they're really important, because every citizen has a voice, but to have that voice, you need to have that information, because knowledge, you know, depends on that. And what I see Dogwood doing is breaking down that information and providing the factual, key, pertinent things that, you know, that we have to work on, because without that, you know, we can't be doing the same thing or duplicating, but we have to put our resources together. And the biggest resource is our minds. And once we're working together, you know, it'll be unstoppable. And the Citizens Initiative, I know it's a post strategy, but I think what I was seeing was that it's going to provide a lot of information to citizens to really question, you know, this big project that, you know, Kinder Morgan's proposing. I've talked to people right from, you know, the interior to Burnaby to Tsleil-Waututh, and, you know, they're totally against the project, and they want to be able to protect, you know, their way of life. It might not, you know, from the Indigenous way of life, and then from those people in Burnaby, they don't want, you know, the pipeline going through their mountain. So I think what the volunteers are is a key fundamental aspect in all the work we're doing. If we didn't have volunteers, it'd be very, very difficult to do with what we need to accomplish at the end of the day. And we put all our energy, our minds, and our hearts together. I am 100% positive we will make that difference for not only ourselves, but for our future generations, which are dependent on our actions today.
Thank you so much for your words and for your time today. There is a ton of work ahead, but it's an honor to be tackling it together. And so, yeah, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Kyle.
That was Chief Judy Wilson on the line from Nisqually near Chase, BC. And next, I want to bring in Sophie Harrison, Dogwood's pipeline and tanker campaigner. Welcome, Sophie.
Happy to be here.
So I was lucky enough to be invited to witness the vote at the Chiefs Council last week. What was the reaction back in the office to the news that UBCIC has decided to include the Citizens Initiative in its plan to stop Kinder Morgan?
Elated. I think we are all extremely excited to really feel those tides turning, feel new alliances being made and complementary strategies really being weaved together in a single bill, showing the incredible and continuing leadership from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs.
That reminds me, we should also thank Chief Lee Spahan from the Coldwater Indian Band. He seconded Chief Wilson's resolution, and his community is also one of the nations challenging the federal approval in court. So they're really stepping up in Coldwater. So meanwhile, Sophie, where's Kinder Morgan at in their planning?
Well, I think the company's timeline is pretty interesting because, for one, they are still looking for a partner to fund 50% of the project. They clearly don't have the capital on hand to start off with. And also, obviously, there will be ongoing legal challenges in the courts to determine the constitutionality of this approval. Still, Kinder Morgan, at least, is hoping to start construction in the fall. So we'll see whether they follow through with that. But I think that's exactly why we'd be looking at launching an initiative this summer as a way to delay or cancel BC's permits and buy time for all the other strategies to keep moving forward on that front.
Right. So there's a question that we get all the time about the initiative. Basically, people say pipeline approvals are federal jurisdiction. So what are you doing? How can a provincial law stand in the way of a project like Kinder Morgan? Can you add some clarity on that?
Absolutely. Well, we all know the province of BC has jurisdiction over a lot of things that this pipeline is going to impact, including fresh water or human health and safety. So what we'd be looking at with this law is defending those things using provincial jurisdiction. The question of provincial jurisdiction versus the federal government actually came up during the HST, the Fight HST initiative. There was a Supreme Court ruling, which I think is giving us a lot of hope here at Dogwood. It said, we are simply concerned with determining if the bill is with respect to any matter within the jurisdiction of the legislature. That is the provincial legislature.
Right.
So when it comes down to it, if it's within the provincial legislature's jurisdiction, it can go forward. And then it's up to the feds in the end whether they want to go ahead and challenge it, which of course would be a very tough decision for them, especially considering how provinces like Quebec and elsewhere would react.
Right. The federal government just coming in and trying to unwrite BC law. Okay. Well, thanks for the update. Exciting news. It's been a great week. I just have one other question, which is, when are you going to record a hashtag KM challenge?
Is that you nominating me, Kai?
I am officially nominating Sophie Harrison to jump in an icy body of water. People love it. Reporters love it. We keep getting phone calls about literally like... more reporters have called about the KM challenge than I think people have actually jumped in water. But
well, for now that is.
For now. It's gonna go huge. So what's your plan?
This weekend.
BMX? You gonna backflip into the snowboard?
Probably not, but I will jump in the Salish Sea and go for a swim this weekend.
You gotta find a way to step it up. You got people in northern BC.
Yeah, Kizia Nagata. It's a tough act to follow.
Just thrashing on top of the ice. Okay, cool. Well, KM challenge, hashtag KM challenge, if you want to nominate your friends to, in a fun way, remind people what it is we're fighting for. And in the meantime, what can people do if they are looking to get involved on the initiative preparations?
Well, lots going on. The first thing we're looking to do is actually get people officially registered. Because the Initiative Act is run by Elections BC, there's an official form you can fill out, and that's your commitment to say, if Christy Clark does buy her way back into power, I will be there, I will pick up a clipboard, and I will sign up my fellow British Columbians to defend our water and our health. So you can find that on the Dogwood website, dogwoodbc.ca, and fill it out yourself.
Awesome. Okay, thanks, Sophie.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Dogwood Podcast. Let's get on the line now to Maple Ridge. Cheryl Barron was the provincial organizer for the Fight HST campaign. Back in 2010, her teams gathered more than 700,000 signatures across all 85 ridings in BC. It was the province's first successful initiative petition. Welcome, Cheryl.
Hi, Kai. Thanks for that.
So whenever we talk about launching an initiative, people tell us that's impossible. What do you say to that?
I say, don't let people tell you that. We heard through the entire Fight HST campaign that we didn't have a chance, and I guess we did. I always thought that if the support was there and the will was there and the commitment was there, that nothing's impossible.
I mean, the HST I get it. It was a betrayal. It was a promise that Gordon Campbell made, and then he backtracked on that, and it was going to take money out of people's pockets. On the Kinder Morgan issue, why is it important to you to give this Texas pipeline company a run for their money?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for me. Number one is I'm from a forest industry town and a forest industry family, and I feel really strongly about responsible resource use that benefits us all. You know, by contributing money to the provincial treasury and by giving us good long-term, good-paying, family-supporting jobs for a long time, like, as well as protecting, you know, our environment. BC is beautiful. Our coastline is beautiful. And it's just, you know, something that we are caretaking. It's not ours to ruin. So we have to make sure we look after it the best we can. I think that a lot of people want to be involved in this campaign for all kinds of different reasons. Another reason for me is that I don't believe the National Energy Board approval process was fair. I believe it was already a done deal, and they just went through the motions to try and appease us. So I believe it's about the bottom line for a foreign company's shareholders. And I've seen this movie before, being from the forest industry. I don't know if you remember Fletcher Challenge in BC in the 80s. They came in and promised us they were here for the long haul. But then they just took everything they could, cut and ran, and left everyone in the lurch. So I don't see it being any different this time. They're already backpedaling on promises they made to some of the unions for construction work.
Right, for using BC labor and Canadian steel.
Pardon me?
For using BC workers and for using Canadian steel.
Yeah, they're backpedaling. I know some of the unions have been trying to pin them down, you know, for specifics, and they're dancing away. They're pretty good at it. So I don't see that this is a good project for the province. I just don't think the benefits are worth the risk. So that's why I'm against this project.
What are you most looking forward to about getting back in the saddle, about organizing another initiative? Feels good, right?
We want to win. But, you know, even if you don't actually come up with the numbers to win the campaign, you can sleep at night knowing that you put in the effort. And even if you don't actually come up with the right numbers, if you win, if you collect a lot of signatures and you make people pay attention, it can still affect the outcome of what happens. So I like to win. I like to get the numbers and have them all verified and get, you know, do it that way. But if you put up a good fight and a good showing, I believe you can get almost the same results.
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree. Organizing is organizing, and this could become the backbone of a democratic movement in every riding in the province, right? If you've got 100 canvassers on the ground and trained, you can run recall campaigns, you can run nomination campaigns, leadership races, you could take over a political party.
Yeah, you could. Really, if you think about it, 100 people on each riding is not that many people.
I think we're on track. We've got folks signed up in 60 out of the 87 ridings so far, and we haven't even gotten through the election. So thanks so much for joining us, Cheryl, and look forward to working with you over the course of the spring and summer.
You're welcome, Kai, and I look forward to working with you too.
That was Cheryl Barron, provincial organizer for the Fight HST campaign, and now working with Dogwood on the phone from Maple Ridge. You're listening to the Dogwood Podcast. Let's get on the line to Courtney, BC now, and our provincial organizer on the North Island, Dave Mills.
Hello, Kai.
Hey, Dave. Hey, good. So I hear you're joining Dogwood full-time.
I am. The timing couldn't be better. Critical moments like this when we really need to ramp up staff capacity, I'm really excited to have the opportunity to contribute more of my time, and it's going to be a busy year and a fantastic opportunity. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm stoked that you're able to come on for the initiative full time. How's morale? How's morale in the Comox Valley?
Yeah, I think you know, we've been through some dark weather, both metaphorically and realistically. You know, we've obviously just been digging out from snow, and I think. You know, the fact that we were in not even on the radar for the Trudeau government, and many people didn't expect that. I think a lot of people out here feel like we're in a bit of a sacrifice zone. We don't get a lot of attention. But as of late, you know, I've sensed that people are starting to get engaged and get excited about the election, and that's a good sign.
Okay, so, you know, a lot of people would say, why bother, right? Like, Christy Clark has it in the bag. The BC Liberals have so much money. Basically, they're just going to buy their way back to power. I'm always curious. Where's your thinking at these days?
I would say that in the past, you know, Courtney Comox and Parksville Qualicum would be two ridings the BC Liberals could count on. I just don't get the sense they can count on them the same way this time.
Why is that? What has shifted?
I think what's shifted is people have seen sort of the largesse floating around Victoria. They've seen all these, you know, super high profile announcements and high profile promises around jobs and the economy. But if you look around here, I mean, obviously we have older demographics, so we do have more retired folks. But I mean, the job opportunities for young people aren't here. And in the areas where there are good paying jobs, like in aquaculture and forestry, and to some degree tourism and fisheries, you know, the Clark government hasn't done any favors to those folks.
Speaking of Vancouver Island, it's been a big battleground between the Greens and the NDP in the past. I mean, we saw that in the federal election.
Yep.
Do you think that's going to heat up again in the provincial?
I would expect so. Yeah, hard not to see that happening.
So how do you deal with that when basically Christy Clark doesn't have a right-wing opponent in most ridings? The Conservatives are pretty dysfunctional, but you've got strong competitors within the NDP and the Greens. How do you deal with that in your neck of the woods as a nonpartisan organizer?
Yeah, there's only really one way to deal with that, and that is to motivate the maximum voting block possible. So, I mean, I think across BC, the number is 1.5 million folks didn't vote in the last election.
Yeah, it's 57% turnout.
Yeah.
Which is brutal. Like the federal, I think we got it up to 70 plus in the federal.
I think this riding hit 75.
No, you guys were special, though. That was an anomaly.
Yeah, it may well have been, but that's the idea, right? There are a lot of people who did not bother voting last time, and so if we do our job and turn out as many voters and possibly register new ones, then that's the best antidote to that.
So get people onto the lists and then motivate maximum voter turnout and trust people to make that choice.
I fully trust people to make that choice. And, you know, when we show up on the door and we're not wearing an orange shirt or a green shirt, it's easier to have those conversations that get people thinking about voting again. And it gets people exploring the party platforms a bit more clearly and asking questions and maybe attending debates. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that motivates people to cast a decisive ballot.
So you're saying that staying nonpartisan can actually up people's engagement because you're not tugging on their sleeve trying to say vote for me. You're providing a service.
Absolutely. And you know, in the federal election we had a few of our key people say, hey, you know, my heart is really with the opposition. They went and worked for the party of their choice, and after the election they came back and said, you know, I know that we were able to get through to far more people when we were just out talking specifically about issues rather than partisan politics. I definitely think it opens the door for people to hear you. And if people hear you and a conversation begins, then it's more likely that people are going to act when their values are triggered than when they're having to fight through the anger that a lot of people just naturally feel when they think about politicians.
Yeah, I guess I'll let you go in a minute, but I was curious about that, watching Donald Trump last week just slamming the media and people eating it up, right? Like the respect for politicians. If there's one group that's like hated even more, it's the media. Do you think that there's an opportunity for us in a world where that public trust in politicians and media is on the downswing?
I think there is. You know, I ran a little supporter survey across the email list back in the fall, and one of the questions I asked about people was, you know, have you heard about Dogwood's sort of news side? Have you seen our content? And a lot of people hadn't, you know. And so the next question I asked was, do you think we should be in the news game? Do you think we should be providing content that people trust? And overwhelmingly, it was over 75% people said absolutely.
Well, that's very meta, because here we are doing an internet radio show. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate your time. And congratulations again on joining the team full time. I look forward to having you back on the podcast.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for the call, Kai.
We are a province of over 4.5 million people, and 185 donors are funding half of the activities of the governing party. So those 185 donors are getting a good return on their investment in the BC Liberals. They're getting tax reductions while regular people are paying more for health care, they're paying more for their insurance, they're paying more for their energy costs.
So last week, MLAs John Horgan and Vicky Huntington introduced bills to rein in BC's Wild West of political fundraising. Three different private members' bills would ban corporate, union, and out-of-province donations and put a stop to cash for access fundraisers. Here to tell us more is Lisa Sammartino. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Kai.
So this is the BC NDP's sixth time tabling a bill to ban big money, and the last five times the Liberals have just laughed and voted it down. So why introduce a bill for a sixth time?
Well, the BC NDP are hoping, as we get closer to the election, that BC Liberal MLAs will find their conscience, listen to their constituents, and step up this time in time for the May 9th election. And of course, political pressure is on them since the New York Times piece in January.
Are they hoping that, though? Like, is this not just an attempt to make them look bad before the election? Or do you think there's actually a hope that this could go through?
Well, we only need 5 BC Liberal MLAs to break ranks. So if constituents step up and say, this is an important issue, I'm taking it with me to the ballot box. I will be voting in May, and I'll be voting based on this issue. We're hoping that some fragile BC Liberal members will
vulnerable
take a stand.
Seats. Gotcha.
Yeah, and they are out there.
So it would take 5. It would take 5 votes, basically 5 people defying the party whip. How do you do that? How can people put pressure on their MLAs this close to an election?
Call, contact in any way, visit their office or email them. Let them know that this is an issue. And I think the most effective way is visiting them or phoning them.
You worked in a constituency office.
I did. I worked in a constituency office for 3 years, and I know this is a proven technique. MLAs and MPs really, really care about what their constituents think of them.
So showing up in person?
Yeah. I mean, I think my,
does that,
my
are you
fellow
sure?
constituent assistants might hate me for this, but it does make a difference. And I think phoning also does. Even if you're not able to talk to the member, even if you just leave a message or talk to their assistant, that's going to get to them eventually.
So that's more effective than sending an email or...
Mm-hmm. Emails are read by interns typically. Mm. And they can be easily copy and pasted. Mm-hmm. The more effort you put into something, the more they're going to know you care about it. And Dogwood has made it easier to make a phone call, even easier.
I like how you're talking in the third person. Lisa built a thing that you can use.
I didn't build it.
tell me about the thing.
Yeah. So if you go to our website, we have done all the work for you. All you have to do is put in your phone number and your postal code so we know which riding you're in. Hit a button that says make the call, and we will connect you to your MLA's office. You don't even have to know their name, even.
Have you tested it?
I have. I called my MLA, Rich Coleman, because I'm out in Langley, and
nice.
I left a message telling him this was an important issue, asking him to ban big money from politics before the next election.
You think Rich Coleman's going to see the light?
If enough people call, he will. Yeah.
Okay. It does feel like the momentum is building around this. Do you feel like the controversy around political financing is making a difference in terms of the political calculus in Victoria?
Yeah, absolutely. We've already seen proof of that. We know that the Liberals now have real-time disclosure. They're talking about transparency constantly. And we've seen the Premier drop her second salary. That's all because of you. That's all because of British Columbians saying this is a big deal.
I was really flattered there for a second. I was like, me?
You and several million people.
Yeah, no, I...
taking a stand.
It comes up in conversations with people that I normally don't hear talking about politics. So it
absolutely.
Does...
86% of British Columbians care about this issue on all sides of the political spectrum.
Do you think it's enough to overcome the cynicism? Like, people here are so used to thinking of politicians as you know, corrupt, like they're all the same. And do you feel like that's shifting?
I do. I mean, it always shifts the closer you get to an election because even if you're not a multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation, at the end of the day, you are the one that's going to help them keep their jobs or potentially not help them if you don't vote.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah. We saw that in the federal election. Their positions got a lot more malleable the closer they got to the election day.
The cynicism is real. It's really easy to feel jaded by the system and feel like, especially if you're in a riding of a party that's not listening to constituents, to feel like your voice doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. But what we're hoping is if you are in a BC Liberal riding, like I am, that you will raise your voice and individual MLAs will realize how important this is and bring it up in caucus. Mm-hmm. Even if the leader, Christy Clark, doesn't say like, okay, we'll all support these bills, maybe she'll release them from a whip so they'll be able to vote on their own free will.
The election day is, of course, May 9th. Do you have any predictions on what's going to unfold between now and then?
I think we have a really big opportunity right now where if British Columbians stand up, we can make a difference before May 9th. Even if we can't get the legislation through, we might see a difference in all parties' platforms. It'd be really cool having three major parties have Ban Big Money in their platform going into the election, and we can make a real change here come May.
All right. Thanks a lot, Lisa.
My pleasure.
Well, there you have it, the Dogwood Podcast for the week of February 20th. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you have any feedback or suggestions, don't hesitate. You can email us, dogwood@dogwoodbc.ca, or find us on social media. And if you're a musician or you know any musicians who would be willing to donate some instrumental tracks to the show, we would love to have a variety of stuff we could use, so please let us know. And of course, if you have ideas about stories we should be looking at or people we should interview across British Columbia, please put us in touch. Until next month, thanks again for your support. Keep your head up, and we'll talk to you soon.